W252 DR Oshkosh and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green.
ABC News, I'm Lionel Moyes. Fallout continues over classified documents found in President Biden's home and office from his time as vice president. Five more documents were found last week. House Republicans demanding the White House turn over a visitor's log from Biden's Delaware home, but the White House says that does not exist.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says the president is not coming clean about the classified documents found.
The White House tried to say it was all cleared up on Thursday, and now that we find there's more documents, I think there's a lot of questions that continue to raise, and we want to get all the information possible.
The White House calling House Republicans hypocrites for launching investigations into those Biden documents while not doing the same for classified material found at Donald Trump's home. Andy Field, ABC News, Washington.
A shooting at an MLK Day event in Fort Pierce, Florida left 8 people injured. 4 others were hurt in chaos following the shooting. The Rockies bracing for a winter storm with up to 2 feet of snow in the forecast. This is ABC News. President Biden observed the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday by calling on the country to continue following in Dr. King's footsteps.
At the National Action Network's annual Martin Luther King Jr. celebration, President Biden recalled his own father's advice to not remain silent as others are wronged. Biden adding that though the country has made progress since King's 1968 assassination, Americans can't stop now.
The path is clear. To go forward, we need to go together. So let's be guided by Dr. King's light.
Justin Finch, ABC News, Washington.
Vice President Kamala Harris stopped by a room of George Washington University volunteers putting together academic kits for Jumpstart students. She praised their work in the community.
It's extraordinary, and it's an extraordinary sign of the strength that we each possess, and when we do it as a community, the impact that we can have on our world.
Education Secretary Miguel Cardona was also there. Lionel Moyes, ABC News.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Go by any construction site in Wisconsin, you're going to see a lot of Michael's trucks. Since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming with Foxconn without any results in that area.
Do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract? I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But of course, Michael's corporation would get to build that said bridge.
Listen, Monday through Friday from 2 to 3, it's Dueling Tangents.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again. Then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party? You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Big boss man, can't you hear me when I call? Big boss man.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Thank you for tuning in wherever you're listening on the Civic Media Network. Thank you for joining for the 1 o'clock hour. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. Coming up for the whole hour is David Haynes, who after a journalism career spanning more than four decades, a third of which was at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, has retired. How's that feeling?
I am in no danger of going back to full-time work anytime soon.
He was also my boss. I am still working at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is not. But for the first 15 months of my tenure there, every week, you would be in charge of the teleprompter. Well, first you'd be in charge of fact-checking and making sure what I was going to say, while opinionated, was accurate.
Correct. Although I think the teleprompter was by far my greatest contribution to the effort.
Absolutely.
And even that, I was not that good at, I have to say.
You were fine. You got better. You certainly got better. But now, instead of just being my boss, he is my friend. And I'm so happy to have you on the show today.
I'm happy to be here. It's awesome. I had a circuitous route getting here. I took the bus all the way from my home in Whitefish Bay.
And that is a trek.
It was kind of interesting. I would not want to be someone trying to work in Waukesha County and living on the east side of Milwaukee and every day and have to do that, but it was fine.
2 hours, you said?
Roughly. Well, 2.5 because I stopped to get a coffee at Colectivo on the way.
Okay.
Sustenance.
But this is the kind of time that you now have that you can enjoy.
I got nothing but time, Kristen.
Do you have anything for the suggestion box for the transit system?
Well, being on time would be good. The second bus was a few minutes late, and as some of you might know, if you've looked outside, it's raining today. So, but it was fine.
Well, we're happy to have you. Thank you for coming in
Thank
person.
You.
And so, yeah. You've only ever done journalism.
That's right.
So 19 was your first job?
Yeah, I was 19 years old. I knew even before that I wanted to write. And I went to a creative writing seminar my senior year of high school. I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to write a novel or something. And I realized that's really hard. And it doesn't probably pay you much money. So I studied journalism in college. First at a two-year commuter campus near my home in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and got a call one day from the editor of the paper in my hometown of Auburn, Indiana, a town of about 8,000 in northeast Indiana. And it turns out, I didn't know this at the time, but my high school baseball coach knew I was interested in writing and thought, well, maybe he could write about our team. I think hoping he'd get good coverage. But it was a great opportunity for me, and I had a chance to learn how to do it from the ground up.
So you started in college. What were your jobs before you made it to Wisconsin?
So I went to work immediately after college in Fort Wayne, a paper that's now out of business, and we'll talk more about what's happened to the newspaper business later on. But I had a paper in Fort Wayne, an evening newspaper. They used to have evening and morning papers. What a concept. Called the New Sentinel. And I worked there 9 years as a reporter and editor and did all kinds of things. And then I went on. My wife's job took us out to Massachusetts. She was working in Worcester in central Mass, about 50 miles west of Boston. And I found a job in Lowell. And Lowell was this awesome town of about 100,000, about 25,000 of the people living there had recently come to the city from Southeast Asia for a variety of reasons.
Oh, wow.
They had a huge influx of migrants. But it was a town of immigrants when I first, and I'm coming from Indiana, which is kind of insular, a little bit homogenous. So I walk out my first day to get lunch in Lowell, and I started counting the languages being spoken. And I got to six.
Wow.
I heard, I don't know Greek, but I heard Greek. I heard French. I heard Spanish. I heard English. I can't remember the others, but it was like shocking. It's this international city that is a city of immigrants. And so super interesting to work there. The newspaper is family owned. They really cared about the community. And I learned a great deal. But we wanted to get back to the Midwest. And so 1994, both of us landed jobs at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It wasn't the Journal Sentinel then, though.
Was it the Journal or the Sentinel?
Yeah, I came to the Sentinel.
Okay.
And my wife worked for what was it called? Journal Communications.
Okay.
Which handled the business operations for both newspapers. So she was a circulation manager, one of the top managers in our circulation department. So making sure the door went or the paper went thunk at the doorstep every morning. And I was hired to start a new business publication called Monday Business for the Sentinel. It was a what we call a tab, so a magazine size. My boss was George Stanley in 1994. And when I left, my boss was George Stanley.
Well, you two are similar in age. So that weird at that point of like your boss? Because what were you at that point? You would have been in early 30s?
Yeah, that's probably what was I? Yeah, 30 something, late 30s.
Okay. Yeah. So you did that, but then at one point you were the education editor, the enterprise editor, the business editor, the opinion editor, and then your final, as my boss, was the ideas lab editor, which was a transition, still opinion, but kind of a transition into more solution journalism. You also were the community engagement coordinator. And so what, because I at your retirement party the other night, one of your colleagues and friends poked a little fun at you that when you made the switch over to opinion, that you weren't always great of infusing it with enough opinion.
So
what was that transition like of like, especially I think what you said before is that you loved writing, but journalism is as much writing as it is getting the information. And so what have you found as the balance of all the different things that you've done, the writing versus editing, the reporting versus opinion, like what different things did it feed you? And like, what advice do you give for people who in this broad world of journalism, where to find the nuggets that feed what you're best at or what you enjoy the most?
So I'll talk about the opinion thing first. And it's really true. That was my friend, Ernie Franzen, who retired, took a buyout in 2017 and left me all alone on the opinion board for a period of time. You know, it's really weird to have an opinion board of one person. I mean, you have a conversation with yourself. I mean, how do you do that? We figured it out. But when I first went to the opinion board, I'd been a journalist at that time for 25, going on 30 years. And so I'd never done opinion. And literally the first piece I turned in, Ricardo Pimentel, my mentor, friend, and boss, said, you can put some opinion in here, you know? And so I figured it out. So you talked about, I did have a lot of opportunities to try different things. And I always found that after about 5 years on a job, I was sort of eager to try something else. And the thing about the Journal Sentinel that I always admired, and George is largely responsible for this, along with my former great friend and boss, Marty Kaiser, who retired, I think, around 2016, they created a culture of learning in that newsroom, a culture of collaboration, a culture where people respected one another and learned from one another. And so whenever I made the transition from writing to editing or back to writing again, or in the case of working on the opinion board, doing both, I learned a lot. You learn a lot from being an editor about writing. You learn a lot about writing from being an editor. And so those experiences I just thought were great. But I think the best job I had was the last one I had, where I could do writing and editing and do community engagement and get out of the office.
And so with the community engagement, because obviously the last couple of years, as we've talked about, have been hard. But what did it look like when you first took that on? And also, where do you think what do you think the importance is? And I know we're going to come back to local journalism and newspapers in the third segment of this hour, but because I think that's something that I find really interesting is like now that I'm back and I feel like the pivot back towards how do you talk to the people who you're also reporting for and you're trying to give them information that they need, but it's also it can't be a one-way street. Like you have to be getting stuff from them. And so like the community engagement part is so important. And so how did you approach it when you were in charge of it?
At first I saw it as a way for us to take our journalism to the public. And so we collaborated with UWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, and did a series of conversations called Across the Divide. At the end of 2016, after that just rancorous, awful election, awful for a number of reasons, as we know, I just was really concerned about the fact that people didn't seem to be able to talk to one another. And so we talked to public radio and said, could we do a series of events that would be focused on bringing people who have different opinions together and having a conversation? So the first one we did was at Maxie's upstairs, there on 68th and Wells. And we had a super conservative lawyer, Rick Essenberg from Will, and a liberal writer, Janet Eisen, who had written a lot for us. And we talked about how to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And then we did subsequent shows on school choice, on immigration. We did another one on education that's slipping my mind. But the idea was, could we have a conversation? Could we bring our journalism with our journalists out to the community? And increasingly, before the pandemic, it became more about, can we get out and talk to audiences that we're not reaching now? So we did a lot of work through a project we called Listen MKE, which eventually took on the library as a partner and Milwaukee PBS as a partner. Did a lot of work in predominantly Black neighborhoods in Milwaukee, just listening, because it was clear to us that we didn't understand what people living in those communities really wanted or needed.
We have to take our first break. I have some more follow-up questions, but sure. Where I want to go next is because we're losing both you and George, George Stanley is also retired. So there's a lot of institutional knowledge that we are losing. And especially for someone like me who is still learning what I missed while I wasn't living here. So when we come back, I'd like to have a little bit more of a conversation of how Wisconsin has changed since you've moved here.
Sure.
This is As Goes Wisconsin. Our guest is David Haynes. Stick right here.
Give me a boss man, the one that's going to treat me right. Rip hard in the evening. Rest easy at night. Big boss man, big boss man, big boss man. Can't you hear me when I call? I said you ain't so big. You just tall, that's all.
The radio show your mother warned you about.
Actual tyranny of a dictator. Dictator's gonna dictate Putin. And what did Trump do? Trump kneeled to the man. Embarrassing Republicans, and you're still with the guy? This is your front runner in 2024? You've been smoking some of Mike Lindell's crack. What are you thinking?
They're the GCCCP. We are the devil's advocates.
Live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
My Shiro always goes the extra mile, stretches every dollar, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Follow Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy overnight with isolated rain showers likely. Lows around 36. Winds out of the southwest, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance for scattered showers tomorrow, high of 39. Overcast again tomorrow night, 30. 4 to 8 inches of snow Wednesday night through Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 41.
Fox Valley, regional and state news and commentary for us to find common ground. Civic Media.
So what did I miss? What did I miss? Virginia, my home sweet home, I want to give you a kiss.
Yeah, she's...
I've been in Paris meeting lots of different
ladies. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, our guest this hour. Is David Haynes, who is the recently retired, my old boss, Ideas Lab editor over at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where he wore many different hats over the decades? How many years? So if it was a third of your career, how many years in total 19, were you?
Almost 29.
Almost 29. Wow. Yeah. How long he was at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And one of the things I've now come back and been back for about 2 years and to obviously talk a lot about politics and have opinions about politics, which was some of the things that we worked on together and my videos over there. But there's so much stuff that I wasn't here for. I left in 2003, so there's this 17-year gap of what was happening in the political sphere, what was happening to the state. And so I left about 9 years after you moved here.
So Tommy Thompson was still governor when you left, or just left?
Had just left.
So Jim Doyle was, or yeah. McCallum or Jim Doyle.
McCallum, I think, and then Jim Doyle, because...
You missed a lot.
I missed a lot. And so as you're now, you know, one of my favorite things of sitting at my desk that was across from your desk at Journal Sentinel is there would be times where you and I would be talking, but then every once in a while, like George would walk by or Carrie would walk by or some of the other... like journalists and reporters or editors who've been there for so long, and just the stories you guys have of Tommy Thompson or Walker and as journalists. And so this is a shorter segment, but as far as like what in the 30 years you've been here, how would you describe what changed and what were some of the pivotal changing points of what Wisconsin was like in the 90s versus what it's like now?
Politically.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, the biggest change was the election of 2010. And leading up to that election, Democrats had control of the governor's office. Jim Doyle was governor. He was retiring. So it was an open seat. Tom Baird and Scott Walker were running for governor. But the Democrats controlled both houses of the legislature, and the state Supreme Court was controlled by the liberal wing of the court. After the 2010 election, the Republicans controlled the governor's chair in both houses of the legislature, and that was a redistricting year. And so new Governor Walker decided, and the Republican leadership decided, that they were going to play hardball. They didn't do anything corrupt, illegal, but they played hardball. So they gerrymandered the state. In 2011, they pushed through Act 10, which I'm sure you've talked about on your show, which basically gutted the public employee labor unions. And that was all under the guise of closing a budget deficit, which, if memory serves, was $170 million or something. It wasn't huge. But what it was really about was disempowering the Democratic Party in the state, because the foot soldiers for the Democratic Party were those big unions, mm-hmm. the Service Workers Union in Madison and the Wisconsin Teachers Union. And that fundamentally changed, along with gerrymandering, fundamentally changed our politics. And what Republicans in power now going on was at 13 years.
So was it nicer before? Like, were there, was, I mean, because I would imagine that there was always mean, oh. two-party politics is always going to have people.
You're always going to have competition. And, you know, going back prior to 2010, there was the biggest scandal I can remember was the caucus scandal where people who worked for the two caucuses, the Republican Democratic caucus, were working, getting paid by the government to do political work. And Dee Hall from then the Wisconsin State Journal and a couple of our reporters exposed that. Chuck Kowala, who was a major leader, Democratic leader in the Senate, played a lot of hardball with Tommy Thompson. So I wouldn't say it was nicer, but it got even more bare knuckle after 2010. And I think it was largely because the Republicans, through the actions they took, again, not illegal, you know, they won. And what I've always said to Democrats who complained is you shouldn't have lost the 2010 election. But what they did was by basically stripping the power of the Democratic Party, left the Democratic Party in a rough shape. And it's never quite recovered in the state.
And one of the questions, Jane, I know that you wanted to ask David, it was about open records laws and kind of where we are now, which maybe maybe this was the case even before this sea change. But how much of that, your question that we've already talked about, kind of plays into all of this? And so I'll let Jane.
David, you remember the 4th of July weekend when the Republican legislature tried to gut the open records law. And then there was all this outrage because somebody got wind of it and printed it. And all of a sudden they all backed off. But what's always bothered me is that no one had to author it and say, this is my name on it, and here's my co-author. It was just like, yeah, some anonymous ghost dropped this by, and we decided to push it along. Why is that a thing? How can that be a thing?
Yeah, it shouldn't be a thing. It was slipped into the Budget Writing Committee, which is called the Joint Finance Committee. It was slipped into the budget bill by somebody on that committee. I'm not sure we know even now who did it. It was one of the Republicans. And I think at that time, the Republicans had outnumbered the Democrats on the Joint Finance Committee by like 3-1. But it shouldn't be a thing. And we argued in an editorial on the front page July 3rd, a Saturday. We called it a declaration of secrecy. But, you know, so we take some credit for the fact that they backed off. But I have to say that conservatives and liberals alike were appalled by what they did. And even I mentioned Rick Essenberg previously, very conservative lawyer, runs the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, Will, pretty controversial law firm. But he was outraged by it. And because of that sort of bipartisan outrage, they backed off. But to answer your question, and it shouldn't be a thing. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. We should know what our elected representatives are doing and who's doing it.
Exactly. All right, which is why that's a good segue, because when we come back, we're going to talk about the importance of local journalism, how it's changed over the years, and where we need to take it to preserve it. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Our guest is David Haynes. Stay tuned.
I've been fighting for the South alone.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
ABC News, I'm Lionel Moyes. Fallout continues over classified documents found in President Biden's home and office from his time as vice president. Five more documents were found last week. House Republicans demanding the White House turn over a visitor's log from Biden's Delaware home, but the White House says that does not exist.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says the president is not coming clean about the classified documents found. The
White House tried to say it was all cleared up on Thursday. Now that we find there's more documents, I think there's a lot of questions that continue to raise, and we want to get all the information possible.
The White House calling House Republicans hypocrites for launching investigations into those Biden documents while not doing the same for classified material found at Donald Trump's home. Andy Field, ABC News, Washington.
A shooting at an MLK Day event in Fort Pierce, Florida, left 8 people injured. 4 others were hurt in chaos following the shooting. The Rockies bracing for a winter storm with up to 2 feet of snow in the forecast. This is ABC News.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
The Rick Smith Show.
where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
How was your drive to school?
Let me tell you, I had to get my iced coffee first. I just can't seem to put it down. My favorite rapper just announced a tour. My phone was buzzing like crazy. I'm so excited. I had to text all my friends right then to talk about it. Then someone started calling me and...
Let's try that again.
I turned my phone off right away. I never drive distracted.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Get it, slip it, cuff it, check it. Talk to doctor now and share it.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it twice a day.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it in the morning and before dinner.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it, and share it with my doctor.
Nearly one in two U.S. adults have high blood pressure. That's why it's important to self-monitor your blood pressure in four easy-to-remember steps. It starts with a monitor.
Now that I know my blood pressure numbers, I talked with my doctor. We're getting those numbers down.
Get it, slip it, cuff it, check it. Talk to doctor now and share it.
Be next to talk to your doctor about your blood pressure numbers. Get down with your blood pressure. Self-monitoring is power. Learn more at manageyourbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association. In partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You care for the house, the kids, and our future. A Shiro's day is never done. So let's start saving a little more now. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings. Visit AsiaRetirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We stand on the shoulders of women who came before us.
Women who fought for their own financial futures.
And now it's our turn.
Join us. Visit WeSaySaveIt.org and take control of your financial future by saving for retirement.
A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. No matter where you're listening across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, thank you for tuning in. A reminder that you can listen to this as a podcast. If you want to go back and listen to any parts that you might have missed, you can find it at asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts. And as always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. Our guest this hour is David Haynes, the recently retired Ideas Lab opinion editor over at Journal Sentinel after he had many different jobs there over the years. But speaking of the text line, you said we have a text?
We do, from the 920. David, what makes the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel better than the other USA Today papers in Wisconsin that people are pulling away from? My family switched from the Oshkosh Northwestern to an independent paper called the Oshkosh Herald because they do more local reporting.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, I don't want to speak to what the other USA Today Network papers are doing in Wisconsin, but I do think that the Journal Sentinel still has, despite some cutbacks in staff, still has a sizable staff that is committed to doing investigative journalism. I've said this before, but I think that, again, despite the cutbacks, we have in that room some of the best young reporters anywhere. A lot of them actually have come from places like the Appleton paper or the Green Bay paper. And so it's always about the amount of staff you have and then how you deploy it. And I haven't worked in those other newsrooms, so I don't know much about them. But I know that in the case of the Journal Sentinel, there's still a lot of talent there and a real commitment to doing the kind of really hard journalism that you have to do to keep people accountable.
And, you know, I think there is, it's interesting because It's so important. Like, I couldn't do, I say this a lot, I couldn't do this show and do this show talking about Wisconsin issues without local journalism, right? It's, I don't have, doing a 3-hour show, I do not have the bandwidth to be going out and finding 3 hours of original stories that I'm directly reporting on and do the show. So ultimately, it ends up becoming like editorializing. And I do the same thing with my videos, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not the person going out there getting all of the source material and the firsthand interviews. I am reading the final product of reporters who are doing all that work and then summarizing it even more or giving opinion on top of it. But like the fact that we're so lucky, I think, still in Milwaukee to have the Journal Sentinel, but in communities around Wisconsin, even that there are for USA Today papers, there are still outlets, but they're understaffed because ultimately so many of our newspapers are getting sucked up into conglomerates that are not, that all they care, I mean, what they really care about is their bottom line. And so that kind of transitions into a conversation about the evolutions in your career that you saw with the newspapers.
Yeah, so, you know, I've said this before, but for the first 25 years of my career, nothing much changed. Mm-hmm. You put the newspaper to bed at midnight, and you woke up, and it thunk, it was on your doorstep in the morning. The last 15 years or so of my career, everything changed to the point that if you've been out of a newsroom for 6 months to a year, there's a lot of things that are different, even in that short period of time. And it's mainly because reading habits have fundamentally changed. Technology has changed how we can read, when we can read. And we want that content sent to us, delivered to us, often over social media. And as a result, the business model of newspapers in particular is just fundamentally broken. Now, there have been... So the business model used to be you sell a subscription to people. That was 20% of your income. 80% of your income was classified and retail advertising. Classified advertising in the Journal in the late 90s, Sunday you might have 80 pages of classified. At $25, $30 for 3 or 4 lines, can you imagine how much money that was?
Yeah.
That supported a huge newsroom. That's all gone. You know, Craigslist and other online marketplaces have taken that away. Retail advertising is far, far less than it used to be. And so that's put great pressure on the business model. It's resulted in big cutbacks. I think the consolidation of newspapers under corporate banners, whether it's Gannett, Gatehouse, Alden, or some other. Look, I think the people at Gannett that I know do really good work. They're very committed to journalism. They're trying very hard to make this work, but I think fundamentally it's hard for a corporate-owned local newspaper. I just think it's hard. It's hard for them to care about 260 markets the way a local owner would care about Milwaukee.
Well, go ahead, Jane.
David, I want to make sure that I'm correct about this, but it's my understanding that having local news outlets, particularly a newspaper, in cities is so important that if you don't have one, it affects your bond rating.
Yeah, there was a study out of the University of Notre Dame 3 or 4 years ago, and I haven't seen it replicated, so it's just one study, but I can see why it would be true. And they found that in communities, and keep in mind, 1 in 4 newspapers have gone out of business since 2004 or 5, according to Northwestern's research of a year ago. So there are many communities that don't have fact-based professional journalism going on in the way, at least, that it once did. And in those communities, this study found that those communities were actually spending more on bond issues. And this isn't because these are bad people running your communities, just because no one's calling them on it. No one's paying attention. No one is raising their hand when they go into executive session illegally, which happens all the time, and saying, no, you can't do that. This has to be an open meeting. That's what journalists do, among many other things. And so there is some evidence for that.
And so what, because I understand from the fundamental side of there, it's a business model, right? You have to be able to have a sustainable business model.
Gotta make money.
Instead of, you know, and so there is certain philanthropy and there are people who want to support local journalism in small amounts, sometimes in very large amounts. I always have a problem with that because I'm like, why is it always up to the very wealthy to decide what gets funded and what's not? But that's a totally different issue for a different day. But what is, if it's not a physical paper, like, is there, because there's obviously at the top, I remember this earlier, midway through last year, during the first kind of announcement of cuts that were going to happen across Gannett properties. And there was an article written that compared New York Times to Gannett. And you and I had this conversation about, it's very fundamentally different products, because the New York Times is one product that has a international readership.
That's right.
That is very different than 260 local markets, and understanding how do you focus on that market. And so is that the part that's broken, that like the return of independently locally owned newspapers, or is there a way that in a large corporation they could do this right? Like, what do you feel like?
Well, I think they could do it right.
In order to save local journalism.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think they can do it right. The New York Times, the Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, Minneapolis Star Tribune, all have different ownership structures, but they're also doing a great job of selling digital subscriptions, New York Times in particular. It's a little bit different, though, for the New York Times. They're an international newspaper. Yeah. They have a huge market to draw from. It's harder for a paper like the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But if you look at what the Journal Sentinel has done, and I give a ton of credit to George Stanley, Greg Borowski, Rachel Piper, our brilliant digital editor at the Journal Sentinel, their strategy has been to build that that well of revenue through digital subscriptions. And, you know, I don't think I'm talking out of school here, but they've quintupled at least in the last few years, and they're going to keep growing that. I think that you need another bucket, and this is where my successor at the paper, Jim FitzHenry, part of his role.
My new boss.
Your new boss. Jim is awesome. Comes through some Oshkosh. But part of his role is to amp up pretty significantly the philanthropic funding for the mission of the organization. So digital subscriptions, that's selling a product, you know, the news, but we need to fund the mission as well. And you do that by getting foundations and getting grants and, you know, getting high wealth people to contribute. It used to be that we knew how, look, this community, this region has a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't changed in the last 20 years. It still has a lot of money. We used to know how to tap that wealth to produce good journalism and a large staff. I'm fully convinced that there's enough wealth in this region for a staff twice the size of what they have down at 330 East Kilburn. But we don't know quite how to tap that at this point. So it's going to be a combination of a lot of different things. Philanthropic giving, which I think has to be significantly amped up, and they know that, they're working on it. Continuing to work this business model of digital subscriptions. And then, you know, there's still a lot of people that want the print paper, and that's probably going to be fewer days a week at some point down the road, but it's not going away anytime soon.
So this is a bit of a pivot, but mostly because I'm interested in getting your opinion on record about this. So there's also this change, I feel like, there's so many different places to get information now. Yep. And I'm throw myself in one of those ways, right? Like the way I got this job, the way I got the job at Journal Sentinel, is I was doing the news based off other people's journalism in an entertaining way.
Yeah.
There's people who do it a lot, have much bigger followings, who do this on a national scale and an international scale. And because there's so many different platforms, there's so many different channels, there's so many different ways the floodgates are open, and the barrier to entry is so much lower than it ever was as far as creating content, spreading information, but also then potentially spreading misinformation, conflating opinion with fact-based journalism. Right. And so where do you feel like that's a good thing? And where do you feel like it's a danger to what good journalism is, which is informing democracy?
Well, I just think we have to have people, professional journalists in every community, doing fact-based, evidence-based journalism. And I think it's great that people like you and others who are doing this work of spreading news in a thoughtful way, but not everyone is thoughtful. And so,
no, what?
Yeah, really? Surprise. So if you go into some of the communities that have either no newspaper or zombie newspapers, which have a nameplate but don't really do much reporting anymore, somebody's filling that gap. Are they filling it with good evidence-based information? Often not. And that leads to disinformation, that leads to more polarization in our politics. It leads to what I think are a lot of bad things. So I want to make a quick point here that I think is relevant. I said this at my retirement party the other night. I really believe it. In fact, I'm thinking about writing an essay on it. I think that in every community, Milwaukee, Waukesha, Green Bay, every community, civic leadership needs to take ownership of this in addition to the journalists, because it's a public good. Journalism is a public good. Evidence-based journalism is a public good. Just like you need roads that are in good repair. You need a water system that works. You need a transit system. We would argue in Milwaukee, we really need an NBA basketball team. Thank God for that. But we also need journalism, because we've seen what happens when you don't have it. And so I think we understand that. So I think civic leadership, and I'm talking about foundations, the chamber, should take some ownership for that as well and be part of a larger conversation about how we support journalism in our communities. And I know some journalists blanch when they hear somebody like me say that, because, like, we don't want to get in bed with the people we cover. Well, we don't have to get in bed with them. But we ought to have a larger conversation in every community about how we can sustain it. Because without it, without that public good, I think we're not as thriving a community.
Well, on that note, we're going to go to another break, because I don't think that was such a great note to end on for that topic. But when we come back, a little lighter, we're going to talk about what you're going to do now that you're retired.
Sure.
Wear your pajamas and play crossword puzzles.
I got a new pair at my retirement party, as you know. And some slippers.
Yeah. Well, we have one more segment. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy overnight with isolated rain showers likely. Lows around 36. Winds out of the southwest, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance for scattered showers tomorrow, high of 39. Overcast again tomorrow night, 30. 4 to 8 inches of snow Wednesday night through Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 41.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media. Civic Media.
Big boss man.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. A reminder that we love hearing from you. So if you have a topic that you think we should cover, or an idea for a guest we should have on, or any feedback for me and Jane, or Jane and I, Jane and me.
Us.
Email us at asgoeswisconsin@civicmedia.us. Our beloved guest for this last hour has been, still is, David Haynes. How do you feel about it? This is your first time on the radio?
It's not my first time on the radio, first time with you.
Yes.
But I have to say, I love the bumper music, Jane. I mean, this is, I felt like doing karaoke here.
Jane's very good at, we do have a Spotify playlist where you can find all of Jane's music. She's very good at finding Easter eggs. So we have different analysts and researchers from Wisconsin Policy Forum come on fairly regularly. And she found a parody song called, what is it called?
It's called Get Data.
Get Data.
So, remember the song Get Lucky?
Yeah.
This is Get Data by the Neurotransmissions.
Yeah. So
one of my favorite things in the world.
Songs, the little Easter eggs, because she knows what the topic is. And so she's pretty good at finding something that's topical and relevant for what the segment's going to be about. So we've talked a lot about journalism, Wisconsin, your career. But what's next? What are you... You're certainly not just going to twiddle your thumbs. I don't think you're someone who's going to not be involved in one way or another.
Right. So I do want to stay involved in journalism in some fashion. And I think there'll be a project or two come my way. I can't talk too much about it yet. But I don't want to work full time, but I do want to do some project work. But in the meantime, you know, I took up painting during the pandemic. And it was mostly just as a way to relax. But I really enjoyed it. So I'm taking a watercolor class with a friend of mine at MATC starting tomorrow.
Nice.
And as one of my retirement gifts from my sister-in-law was supplies. So I think that'll be fun. Some travel is in the works. I'm actually going to France for 9 days in April. And my wife Lisa and I have talked about this, and she said, you can go by yourself. So I'm actually going by myself.
Wow. Which cities are you going to go to?
I may go down to Bordeaux for a bit, but mostly Paris, and it's all about art. I'm the kind of person, when I go to an art museum, I want to stay all day. And my family likes art museums, but not all day.
Okay.
And so they're not reading every plaque like I am. And so that's what I'm going to do.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
David,
I think it'll be fun.
Is there any temptation? Because I think of, again, all of the institutional knowledge that you have, all of the dirty rumors that you must have collected over the years. And maybe this is just my inclination because I'm a bad person, but to write a fictional novel called, like, Madison Schmear or, you know, Madison Dirt. There's so much potential there.
Yeah, yeah. Now that you mention it. No,
No.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have a novel in me. I remember David Marinus, famous reporters, actually from Madison, who worked at the Washington Post, has written books about Vince Lombardi, about Notre Dame, about Detroit. He was a great author. He came in to do a workshop one time at the Journal Sentinel, and someone asked him, how come you don't write fiction? And he says, because that's not my thing. I do journalism. And I kind of feel that's where I'm at, too.
Well, it's also, as you said at the beginning of your career, that you thought maybe creative writing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it really is. I'm so impressed when people who make that jump, because there's something about journalism or opinion that you at least start with the facts. And the part of the process is you have to be a good writer, but it's also the order in which you craft an argument or whatever. But there is some pieces there to start with versus a blank page out of a script or a novel or a poem, And you're like, this can go anywhere. And the only person who decides where it goes is me. And like, I agree with you that I think it is much more, it's much easier to play with the things that are there versus the imagination of, and no guardrails of like, this could go anywhere until an editor tells me to rein it in. I guess I'm doing dragons now.
Yeah. So I don't think I would have any trouble writing. I've never had a problem with just sitting down and writing. I've done some short fiction, but I heard Stephen King has a great book on writing. I think it's called On Writing. I can't remember the name now, but he compares writing fiction to an archaeological excavation. I always thought about, you have to outline everything and you have to know where you're going. He's like, no, you just write and you uncover the story as you go.
And the characters kind of reveal themselves to you, right?
The characters reveal themselves. I thought that was such a, he gave me such hope.
Do you have a story somewhere in the back?
I don't know. Maybe? I don't know. See, I'm also, another project of mine is a family history of the Haynes side of the family. My great-grandfather came from Northwest Ohio. And sometime between 1870 and 1880, he moved to Indiana. And sometime during that decade, most of his family was wiped out by a plague that swept through that part of the country. They called it black measles, which was probably Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and it killed young people in particular. He had a family of nine, and only a couple of them were left. And so I'd love to get over there and research that, because I think there's something there to write, particularly having just come out of a pandemic ourselves, about what happened. And I'd just like to know, for our family's sake, that's the legend. That's all we know. And so that's sort of hanging out there too.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, any parting words on journalism or Wisconsin or advice for those of us who are left here to continue to cover and talk about and hopefully improve?
Well, I think that, one, there's always going to be a place for professional fact-based journalism. It's just really important. I think people inherently know that. And I think civic leadership knows that. But two, as I look, and I'm just going to focus on the Journal Sentinel because that's what I know, I've never seen a better group of young journalists than I see in that room. And I worked with Megan Toohey, who was made famous recently in She Said, the movie and the book. She was a higher education reporter when I was an education reporter. Megan was fantastic. But there's a large group of young people there under the age of 40 who are really good. And so that gives me a lot of hope. And I think they're beginning to figure out the business model. I think they'll figure it out. It's going to take time, but I think they'll figure it out.
All right. Well, David Haynes, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, that'll about do it for us today on As Goes Wisconsin. Stick around for Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Unless you're listening to WXCO in Wausau, then you got the Chad Holmes Show coming up next. But for us, we'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Come back then. But for now, this has been As Goes Wisconsin.
You are never far away from your favorite local radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app, and we invite you to get social with us by following our network's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook pages. Want even more? CivicMedia.us.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. on WISS 1100 AM 98.3 FM Oshkosh Air Support.
Women get a lot of advice about self-care these days, but one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green.